This is H. Tracy Hall. Today is the 1st of May, 1975. I have just returned from a trip to Macomb, Illinois, where I was the speaker at the annual Sigma Xi banquet held at the Western Illinois University. I was invited by Weiler Huron, who is chairman of the physics department. This university has about 15,000 students and many new buildings, including several high-rise dormitories that apparently are capable of housing the entire student body. I set out from Provo on Tuesday, April 29th, in our 1972 Ford LTD Brougham yellow-colored four-door sedan. We had about 4 inches of snow the previous night. It took about 1.5 hours to drive to the Salt Lake Airport because of the heavy traffic during the morning and also because of the snow. I parked the car in the parking lot where it was left until my return today. The flight from Salt Lake to Denver was via United Airlines in a Boeing 727. There was an approximately 2-hour wait at Stapleton Field, Denver, for the flight eastward, again aboard a Boeing 727. This flight stopped at Cedar Rapids, where there was an approximately 1.5 hour wait before the plane took off and landed in Moline, Illinois. The flight was bumpy all the way, even though the jet aircraft pursued its course at approximately 37,000 feet altitude above sea level. This was true except for the flight from Cedar Rapids, Iowa, to the Quad City Airport at Moline. There were gusty winds at all of the airports, and the takeoffs and landings were somewhat jerky. Also, a storm pursued us as we came into Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and seemed to follow us to the Moline Airport. Dr. Huron picked me up in his station wagon at Moline and drove the approximately 80 miles to Macomb. I visited with him and his wife Carolyn in a relatively new home that they have built approximately 2.5 miles from the university. I stayed in a nice suite in the University's Union Building on Tuesday and Wednesday nights. Tuesday morning, I had breakfast at the Hurons and then went with them to Nauvoo. There was a wind and it was a bit chilly, but the sun did shine most of the time that day. The winter has been very extended in Utah with much moisture and snow, and there has been much more than the normal amount of moisture in the plain states. The farmers have been late in getting their fields plowed, and at this point only 1% of the crops have been planted in the western Illinois area. In Nauvoo, we visited the temple site, which now has a fence around it and has been planted in grass, and things have been straightened up and a marker added, as well as some other improvements. We also visited John Browning's home, which I first saw a number of years ago as being primarily in ruins, but which has now been completely restored and has quite a display of Browning's guns. We also toured the Brigham Young home. I am quite certain that 2 or 3 years ago we toured this home with Dan and Shirlene. We were shown the council room just off from the kitchen, our family room, where President Brigham Young and the Council of 12 made the decision to go west. This was an inspiring thing to me, and I had a profound spiritual feeling on standing in that room where they had met and made this historical decision. Nauvoo always seems so peaceful and so quiet, and I am deeply impressed with the sorrow that the people must have had on being forced to leave these pleasant circumstances with the well-built homes and the order and tranquility which must have reigned there for too short a season. I also looked again on the north side of the Clark store near the temple at the lot. That is, I believe it was one of three lots that my great-grandfather Moses Tracy owned in Nauvoo. I had investigated the possibility of acquiring this lot several years ago. The lady who lives in a white frame house beyond the Moses Tracy lot was willing to sell this lot for about $5,000. Perhaps it was about 5 years ago. I had talked to Dr. Kimball of Nauvoo Restoration at that time about purchasing it, and he strongly recommended that I not do it. because he considered the $5,000 price very inflated, and paying such a price would tend to increase the price that people would ask for the property that the church was trying to buy. So I didn't pursue that any further at that time. My daughter Shirlene was very interested in having us buy that lot with the idea that we might do a little archaeological work and see if we could find foundation or old broken dishes or eating utensils or other things that might have been used at the time that Moses Tracy and his wife Nancy Naomi Alexander Tracy had lived there. And further daydreaming of the possibility of perhaps building some kind of a home there in remembrance of them, and perhaps something that might be used as a vacation home for descendants, particularly our own family or something like that. Well, on this trip I was anxious to seek out Dr. Kimball again and see what the status of that lot might be. I found him at his home. He had just returned to Nauvoo from Salt Lake City a day or two before. And when I told him about the lot and the fact that this time I thought I'd really like to buy it even if it cost $10,000, he told me that he had just purchased it yesterday for the church. Now that would have been on Tuesday the 29th of April, and he said he paid $5,000 for it, which he still thought was too high, even though it is probably now some 5 years later. He wasn't able to get the entire 100-foot frontage. The lady in the White House thought that she needed 15 feet of that frontage, and in order to procure the lot and not have any problems, Dr. Kimball decided to let her have that 1,500 feet. Now, the reason that Nauvoo Restoration and the church was interested in the lot is that they are soon to restore the Clark Store, and they will use the Tracy lot as part of their landscaping scheme. Now, I wonder about the fact that this was the Tracy lot might be lost in this kind of a procedure, and I probably ought to go to Salt Lake and talk to Dr. Kimball and Nauvoo Restoration a week or so from now when Dr. Kimball is back in Salt Lake. I'd like to see some kind of a marker indicating that our progenitors lived there. I'm certain at this point that we could never try to restore their home on the basis of a foundation that might be found or something along that line. I suppose that's out now at this point. Nancy Naomi Tracy, in a short article written in her later years, which she called it her diary, but which of course was not her diary because it was written all at one time from her memory, she spoke of how happy it was living there next to the temple lot, where she could look over see the progress on the temple and hear the clang of the masons' hammers, and I suppose no doubt the tools that were being used to chip and form the stone for the temple. It's our understanding that the Wilford Woodruff lot, where they have built and restored a home, the home of Wilford Woodruff, was originally owned by my great-grandfather Moses Tracy, who had built a small home, possibly it was a log cabin, on that lot. And then Wilford Woodruff came along and wanted the lot, and my great-grandfather sold it to him. Now, we think there was a third lot that Moses Tracy owned in Nauvoo, and I do not know where that lot is, but I hope to take the time to look into that and see if there is still a third lot. Now, on that third lot, I doubt that he had built on that. He must have sold it to someone else, but in any event, I should look into that. If there were a third lot in existence that might still be purchased, it still might be of interest to us to purchase that particular lot. The Sigma Psi banquet was held at the Holiday Inn in Macomb. There must have been about 75 people there. I sat next to the university president, a man by the name of Malpass, M-A-L-P-A-S-S. There was also a provost and some deans and department chairmen and others there, along with wives of faculty members. After the banquet, the meeting adjourned to the physics and chemistry building, which is called Curran Hall, to the main lecture room there on the ground floor. Despite some mix-up in the advertising of the event, there were well over 200 people present for my talk. My subject was the usual one in which people have the most interest, that of diamonds. Dr. Huron gave me an excellent introduction, and then I launched into my talk. The talk went very well. People were extremely attentive and obviously engrossed in what I had to say. I had slides to show at the very end of the talk, but as often happens, the physics department's slide projector first burned out the light bulb, and then the projector jammed, and had to omit that part. Had to omit that part of the lecture. But in spite of that, had a rather tremendous ovation at the end of my lecture, which was thrilling to me, of course. The lecture was recorded for television. They have an educational TV station there, and this was to be rebroadcast later. I took an opportunity to get in some good words for the BYU and for the church. Dr. Richard Paul and his wife and Rulon Smithson, formerly of the BYU, who are now employed there, came to hear my address. At the end of my talk, Dr. Huron quipped about how the people could have just shut their eyes during the lecture and imagine they were seeing a Jimmy Stewart movie again. The people laughed, this is just one of those things. For many, many years, people constantly tell me that I talk just like Jimmy Stewart. My wife, Ida Rose, doesn't see how they think it's that way. Of course, it's hard for me to know, but time and time again, people will even stop me. They'll come up to me if I had to be in a conversation and they hear us speaking. They'll say, "Hey, do you know you sound just like Jimmy Stewart?" I had toured some of the areas of their physics department a couple of hours before my talk. They have quite modern facilities and rather well equipped. Although the school does not give the PhD degree, they do give master's degrees. The Hurons had some hickory trees on their property and some hickory nuts. I don't recall that I had ever been aware of hickory nuts before. They're rather much like a walnut, but at least the variety they have has very sharp spikes on each end of the walnut-like thing. Apparently has a husk somewhat like a walnut. And the meat of the nut itself is walnut-like, and the entire thing is very much like a walnut, but it seemed to be sweeter and actually had a slight maple flavor that I thought I could detect. This morning I got up around 5:30 a.m. Didn't sleep too well last night. And then Waller Huron picked me up at the Union Building and at about 6 and drove me the 80 miles to the Moline Airport. Now the United flight out of there this morning flew nonstop to Denver. Again, a 727 plane. Then there was an approximately 2-hour wait at Denver for the flight on the same type of plane to Salt Lake City. I arrived at Salt Lake City at just a little after 12 noon. At Denver, I got to see again the huge Boeing 747s, a really monstrous plane. Also, the DC-10s come into Denver, and there were several of those to be seen. The DC-10 is the only wide-bodied jet that I have flown. I just happened to catch it by accident on a flight from Cleveland to Chicago 2 or 3 years ago. It was the inaugural flight, first flight from Cleveland to Chicago, and they passed out souvenir pictures that I may still have somewhere in my possessions, commemoration of that initial flight of that DC-10 between those two cities. The flight from Denver to Salt Lake, as it came over the Wasatch Mountains into our Utah valleys, came right over Provo, probably about directly over the university, right over the top of Provo Mountain, flew out over Utah Lake, and then took a bearing north over the point of the mountain and into Salt Lake Valley and directly on into the Salt Lake Airport. While it is still rather cool, for the most part, the winds were much milder today and the flight was rather sunny most of the time, all the way into Salt Lake City. The round trip flight ticket coach cost about $196. The parking of the car at the Salt Lake Airport for the 2 days and a little more cost $4.50. On returning home, I found Ida Rose and a couple of boys whom she had working all day, doing some rearranging of the yard, trying to get a little more space to be used for garden, in compliance with President Kimball's suggestion that we expand our home gardens. Ida Rose has been gardening out on the farm in Payson, but it's so far away, and with the fuel shortage, I've been encouraging her to see what we can develop right here at our home at 1711 North Lambert Lane in Provo, so that things will be right here at hand and we will not have to spend so much time and use so much fuel to travel clear out to Payson. While dictating that which precedes this, I'm lying here on the bed next to the telephone in our master bedroom. Phone rang. It was the director of research of Ingersoll Rand in Princeton, New Jersey. His name is Wally McGaughan. Our son, David Richard Hall, and his wife, Karen, and their two little boys live in Princeton, New Jersey, and work at this Ingersoll Rand Research Laboratory. Mr. McGaughan is quite interested in our mega diamond, and he wants to come out here about May 22nd, talk to us about this center diamond material and its possible use in drilling bits. Of course, mining equipment, drilling bits is a big item with Ingersoll Rand, and if our center diamond material could find a place there, it would be good for them and it would be good for us. Wally McGaughan says he has a niece who lives in Provo and that her married name is Sykes and that she and her husband are both students at the BYU. Today is the 26th of May, 1975. It's Memorial Day. Ida Rose and I, this morning, picked all the flowers around the yard and went to American Fork Cemetery, where we put flowers on the graves of some of Ida Rose's relatives. Rosellen Jackson Langford, her grandmother, and her grandfather, James Harvey Langford, I believe. Also her Aunt Annis Langford and others. Then we visited the Riverton Cemetery, where we put flowers on the grave of Donna Ray Coy Hall, David's wife, who died just a little over 4 months after they were married back in 1971, I believe. We also visited Don Coy and Lova Coy in Riverton. Briefly, they are the parents of Donna Ray. We then journeyed northward to the Kaysville Cemetery, where we placed some flowers on the graves of my Uncle Sam Hall, who was my father Howard's brother, and on his wife, Violet King Hall. Then we went to Ogden, stopped briefly, and saw Ida Rose's brothers, Jim Langford and Heber Langford. Then we went down and picked up Grandpa Ernest Fountain Langford, who lives at about 3290 South Orchard Avenue in Ogden, and took him to Altares Cemetery, where we decorated the graves of my father and mother, Howard Hall and Florence Tracy Hall, and my brother Donald's twin boys, who died after living only one day a number of years ago, Ronald and Donald, who are buried in the same plot as my father and mother. Then we went to the grave of Ida Rose's mother, Charlotte Clarkson Langford, and decorated that grave, and also of Ida Rose's grandfather and grandmother Clarkson, who are buried at the same site. We then went to the Ogden City Cemetery, where we decorated the graves of my uncle Ralph Hall, who died in 1918 of influenza in England. He was interned in England, and then some time after the war was over, my grandmother Hall had him brought to Ogden, where he was reinterred in the Ogden City Cemetery. Incidentally, Ralph's wife, Grace Evans Hall, who never remarried after Ralph's death, and who has been a widow since 1918, let's see, that would be about 53 years. She just died yesterday. She lives down in Pacific Grove, California, near her son Robert, who lives in Pacific Palisade. Robert's wife, Ruth Allen, is a sister to Mary Allen Toyne. Mary Toyne died recently after suffering many years from a muscular disease. Her husband, Tom Toyne, lives in our Pleasant View ward and have been very friendly over the years with my cousin Robert, and also with Robert's sister Dorothy. These cousins of mine and their families and my Aunt Grace are not LDS. We also decorated the graves at this Ogden City site of my grandfather and grandmother Hall, Henry C. Hall and Mary Woodcox Hall. Also buried in their plot is my aunt May Hall Hensley, who died, I believe, in 1921 of tuberculosis. This aunt of mine had one daughter named Betty, who I used to see a lot of as a cousin when we were kids living in Marietta. But Betty married, joined the church, but married an inactive member, and they were not particularly active. But Betty died a number of years back. I believe the name of her husband was Bert. And I believe they lived out in the northern part of Ogden. We then decorated the graves of my Tracy relatives. They're located in the northwest corner of Ogden City Cemetery. And buried there is Helen Henry Tracy and his three wives, my grandmother, Emma Burdett Tracy, and her sister, who was also a wife, Mary Jane Burdett Tracy, and then my grandfather's third polygamous wife, Phoebe Truelove Draper, who is the mother of my Uncle Aaron. Also in this cemetery plot are Burdett's, Thomas Burdett, I believe, and one of his wives. A second wife of Thomas Burdett is buried somewhere in southern Utah. She died down there, and in those days they just did not have enough money to bring her up to the Ogden City Cemetery. There are other relatives also buried in that Helen Henry Tracy plot. At the plot, I met two of my cousins, Edith Ratey and Stella Ratey. Neither of these ladies, I believe, married in their lives. Stella had a crippling defect, which I think she had from birth. I can remember her as a child. And Edith, who is a very good-looking woman, although she must be at least 70 years old. These two are the daughters of Emma Elizabeth Tracy Ratey. And Emma Elizabeth is the daughter of Mary Jane Tracy and Helen Henry Tracy. We then journeyed to the plot of Moses Tracy, which is south of Helen Henry Tracy plot, and eastward to the next road. Moses Tracy's wife, Naomi Alexander, I'll get this right, Nancy Naomi Alexander Tracy is buried there next to him. And then there are other Tracy relatives in that plot, including Aaron Ward Tracy, who was my mother's half-brother, being the son of Phoebe Draper and Helen Henry Tracy. We also decorated the grave of Randy Hall. I believe his full name is Randall Eugene Hall, who is the son of my brother Eugene. Randy was killed in the 1963 scouting accident in southern Utah when scouts from our ward and other areas were going on a trip down the Colorado River. That was a disaster in which 13 people were killed, including our Pleasant View First Ward Scoutmaster, Daryl Taylor. Another grave that we decorated that I forgot to mention was the grave of a little son of Ida Rose's sister, Iola, and Iola's husband, Tom Spencer. This little boy, I believe, lived only one day, and he is buried in the Altoorest Cemetery in the southwest corner. At the present time, it is the furthest grave there is into that corner. We went to visit my brother Eugene in Ogden, but he was not home. Then we went and visited my brother Donald and his wife Louise for a short time. Also, after decorating the graves with Grandfather Langford, we went out to the Harmon's Cafe, which has takeout Kentucky Fried Chicken on 14th Street in Washington, and took this chicken home to Grandpa's, where we ate it. After visiting with Donald, we headed for home, arriving home about 6:30 or 7 o'clock this evening. Nancy didn't want to go to Ogden. We couldn't influence her to go, so she's been with her friends here in Provo all day. Virginia is still in Scotland and England. She's traveling with the Burneys, a family she was influential in converting during their holidays, and should be home around the 6th of June, having been gone a little bit over a month. This spring has been a very cold one. We've had much snow, had a huge snowstorm last week. We've had no end of rain. It's been terribly cold. And the snowfall this season, I think, has been double normal. I don't know what the rainfall has been, but it is certainly way in excess of normal. We've had some flooding. There was some flooding on our Payson farm, not serious, but the ditch south of the road on the south side of our farm, which is a high water ditch, which has been dug out to about three times its usual capacity, still overflowed and ran over into our farm opposite the Zellers. The farm has been too wet to do anything with so far this year in the way of a garden for ourselves. I'm not sure whether the farmer that we rent to the farm to at the current time has been able to do any planting yet in the east half of the farm. He planted winter wheat on the west half, and that is coming along just fine. At home, Ida Rose has been doing an awful lot of gardening. We've rearranged some of our land, taken out bushes and grass so that we can have a home garden to comply with President Kimball's suggestions that we increase the size of our home gardens or start home gardens if we do not have them. We've also been doing other things around the house. Late last summer, we installed some new concrete to replace some sunken and broken concrete in the driveway. And while doing that, I placed electrical heating mats in that part of the drive to melt the ice and snow that is a problem on the north side entrance to our house in the wintertime. That project was not finished before winter came, and now I'm busy hooking up the electrical part, which has turned out to be a much larger job than anticipated. In order to get the electricity from our electrical main switch box, which is in our furnace room on the south downstairs part of our home, I've had to take the electricity underground in a trench which we had dug, clear around from the south side of the house, over through the east side, and then around to the north side of the house. The wire is now in the trench and it's covered up, but there are an awful lot of connections to the so-called heating mats, which are buried in the concrete on the north. I hope to finish this up, though, by the end of this week. I have been repairing a press that I sold to the University of Western Ontario 200-ton cubic press sold to them about 6 years ago that I brought back with me at the time we delivered the big 1,000-ton press to them last June or July. And this has been a very slow job, but it is now finished, and we're in the process of packing that to ship it back to Canada. I have a full-time machinist working for me these days. His name is Wesley Liffert. He's a very good machinist. He just graduated in art this past graduation at BYU. Was about the 20th, 21st of April, 1975. And he is now working as a full-time employee for me. We're busy building another 200 cubic press. It will be different. Has some modifications in it. I keep trying to improve the presses. And also be working on other projects of interest to me. I have taken my sabbatical leave this year without pay, and am on my own to earn my own living. I hope during the next 14-15 months before school starts again, the end of August of 1976, that I will be able to to test out some ideas that I have in the field of energy, particularly some ideas for getting energy from the Earth's rotation by the proper use of some gyroscopes or oscillating pendulums, which will serve as some kind of a stable platform form with reference to the Earth. I'm not sure of the theory of this. I got some gyroscopes out quite a while back and have been studying them and fooling with them to see their properties firsthand. And there are some things that lead me to believe perhaps they can serve in this capacity, but maybe they cannot. Anyway, I think proper experimental arrangement